Hey, Brent, I've been talking to some friends up there in the Upper Peninsula over by Bark River, Escanaba area. They said that the off-roads are in town this weekend.
Yeah, Shane. Boy, I've been hearing some crazy noises down D Road. I might have to go check it out.
I think I'll go with you.
Welcome to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil. I'm Brent Smith alongside Shane Stetsny, and man, oh man, Shane, it's my hometown track, Bark River International Raceway, and if that don't get you going, I don't know what does.
You know, when we were talking on the phone earlier today and brought up a couple memories from last year, how great the racing was. We'll talk more about what we saw last year and why Bark River is so awesome a little bit later on in the show, but yeah, I'm excited. You know, I'm a Crandon guy, everybody knows that. I get excited for World Championship weekend at Crandon, but I don't know, it's just something about Bark River. I feel, maybe it's because I'm friends with you, I don't know, and friends with a bunch of people up there, but it kind of feels like home for me too, and it just hits different. Something about Bark River, part of it I think is the fans are so engaged, so excited all the time. It makes our job really fun, but yeah, Bark River, wildly exciting and can't wait to get there.
Yeah, I'm so excited as well, and I've been over there a couple different times on the side-by-side just chilling out and just looking at the track, right? As a kid, we were talking earlier on the phone how, you know, you just reminisce. We were those kids just up against the fence, playing in the dirt, just getting ready for the weekend when we weren't even drivers, we weren't even announcers. We were just there for the passion, and I love every bit about Bark River. Crandon, I feel like it's a home track for me too because I just have so much for that facility and what it does for the sport and us as kids. And Bark River, high, fast speed, flyaway jumps. I mean, you name it, dude. We're going to have some bonsai moves, some slide jobs, and I hope we can breathe on some of these races.
Well, I mean, like I said, if last year is any indication, and again, we'll talk a little bit more about some of the memories that we have of 2023 at Bark River. We're in for a wild one. Let's talk about some of the emerging stories coming into Bark River this weekend for rounds 10, 11, and 12, three races. Another reason that I'm super excited for the weekend. Super Stock Truck really stands out to me right now. The top four in points separated by 25 points, excuse me. Remember, in sportsman racing, you get 50 for a win. You could add two more points if you lead it halfway. So, you know, that group still all definitely within the fight with five rounds left for sportsmen. But the guy in fourth, I was kind of surprised by this when I was looking at the point standings today. Corey Holcher, the rookie, if you can call him that, in Superstock, very sneaky. Six straight top fives, three straight third place finishes. He's in the championship conversation now. Are you surprised that he's a championship threat in year one in Superstock? Did you even know he was that close?
I mean, you've seen what he did in Ben Holzer's truck. He adapted so fast. And yeah, I thought he was going to be a threat each and every weekend, especially on these high horsepower tracks, because you get out there, you get in your zone, and that truck works. It works to his advantage, and I think he's doing what he needs to do, and I know he is. But at Bark River, you got to remember last year, I mean, I'm not playing any favorites, dude. He's my cousin. He's earning his spots, and he swept the weekend. Braden Boshaw is one to watch this weekend, and he didn't have a healthy truck last time out, so watch for him to bounce back. And I mean, look at Nick Bing holding on to that points lead. That it's getting close to the end. You got to be consistent, but watch Nick Bing really try to probably rough it up a little bit more. He needs to open up this gap, but he can't hold back because guys like Joey Machosik, they're not done yet.
It's reminding me a lot of last year when we came into the last round at Crandon, and there were four drivers still all that had like a really good chance at that championship. Braden was one of them. Nick Bing was one of them. And then Ben Holcher and Scott Belanger. Obviously, Ben stepped out, Corey Holcher in, and Scott Belanger having some tough luck trying to get a new truck sorted out in the middle of the season. By the way, I saw another testing video. They're driving it up and down the town road by their shop. So Belanger, we expect, will be closer to full strength, closer to getting that truck figured out, which is fantastic to see. But yeah, it's reminded me a lot of last year where, you know, again, five rounds left, three rounds this weekend, and then at World Championship weekend, two for the sportsmen, so five total. But I'm seeing it set up just like it did last year, where any one of these drivers, it's going to come down to consistency. Who can not have a bad day between now and the final round, round 14?
Yeah, and it's hard to decide in your own brain to be like, okay, do we lay back or do we go for it? And I don't think if you're not aggressive enough at Bark River, I think you're going to really be in trouble. You can't afford to be in that mid-pack and having guys try to go to the moon and fly over everybody during the middle of the race. You got to put yourself in position to win. And if you're these top four or five in the points, you got to make sure you stay out of trouble, pace yourself, and anyone can win. Look at Stock Truck. I mean, we're talking both Super Stock and Stock. We've seen so many winners this year in Stock. But Super Stock is going to come down to who can get out of that rough layout at Bark River. It's fast, it's smooth, it has a nice flow, Shane, but it can bite you too. I mean, it's bitten the best. It's bitten Johnny Greaves. I mean, it's bitten a lot of our great, talented drivers in our sport, and they didn't even see it coming.
Yeah, that track does go away a little bit. I hesitate to say this, but the track surface seems to degrade a little bit more at Bark River. But that's part of the challenge. That's kind of part of, I think, what makes racing there so competitive is you can have the almost perfect race and then make that one critical mistake or find that one rut, that one rock, and all of a sudden it derails your plans.
Right. And that's what you got to go off of, too. You have to be up on the wheel, but yet you got to take care of your product, your team, because that truck needs to stay together and it's rough. The holes, the divots, cemetery turn. I mean, I could go on forever. I mean, I know I've been over there the last couple weeks. They threw a lot of dirt on after these guys went and tested. I mean, some of these guys, I heard rumors that they put in 60, 80 laps in one night, in one day of testing from 9 in the morning till 6 in the afternoon. I mean, there's a lot of drivers that they allowed to go out and test. I think they got their gear ratios right, their converters figured out, and I know a few that looked really, really dominant, and it's hard to tell when they're testing, but anytime you get that seat time, I think we're in for a great, great show.
Well, speaking of a great, great show, Brent, the last four rounds, I'm looking back at, you know, the Dirt City Off-Road National and the ERX Off-Road National out at Elk River. What has happened to the 570s that suddenly made them arguably the most exciting sportsman class to watch?
I believe it's all we're keeping our tech guys on their feet and everyone's learning how to drive that much better. I mean, they're really confident in each other and their cars, and they're driving the hell out of them. I mean, it's ridiculous to watch these 570s. These are some of the best calls of our day, and I got to admit it. There was a couple years where we're like, man, when's 570 done? It wasn't nothing against it. They didn't have cars. It was hard to call, but now it's so crazy to watch these young drivers. We're getting some great talent, and they're ready to move up.
And there's, honest to goodness, like 10 drivers who, over the last four rounds, we've seen mixing it up in podium contention, and not just, none of these drivers are getting lucky and competing for podiums. It's, again, I don't know what's in the water in the 570 pits, but it seems like every driver suddenly super aggressive. They're all driving on the edge all the time. They're starting to race physically. I mean, there's times when it looks like, I don't know, a pro light race or super stock truck race where, you know, a driver will see an opening that's three quarters of a car wide and they say, well, I'm going to put my car there. I think I can make it work. And then we see gloves off racing, I guess, for lack of a better word. It's been so fun.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you who's going to win. I mean, I could throw one at you, Shane. I mean, you pick one of the top five in the points right now and say, okay, that young little driver is going to dominate this weekend. I don't see it because so much can happen. A bigger track layout, I mean, more speed. I mean, these top-heavy cars, you go in too hot and heavy, you could go upside down. And I believe that there's a lot of great talent, but, hey, who can stay out of those deep holes and who can not play tag as much is going to win.
Top six in that class separated by only 29 points, by the way. Wow. Ella Holcher and Logan Fritzinger up at the top, separated by only 1 point. So that's another points battle to keep an eye on as we come into the final five rounds here in 2024. Let's change gears. Let's talk about some pro racing. How about Jimmy Henderson finally breaking through with the brand new truck? Felt like it was a long time coming, but if he's going to get some momentum now, that could throw a wrench in the plans of some other guys.
Yeah, I mean, you got to give him credit. I mean, he came out the last two rounds and really dominated and shown the speed, showing that he's comfy in the truck. I mean, it's crazy to see how far they've come in a short period of time. And I think the confidence is there. And this is his style track. If you remember last year, Shane, at Bark River, He made a little contact, if you want to say contact or no contact, in the sweeper going into the cemetery. He was a rocket ship that day, but that was that other truck that he had, the older truck, which was good. But now I think he's got a better truck yet, because Trad has been really going to work and just fine tooth combing that truck, getting it dialed in. I mean, they're not afraid to throw the kitchen sink on it, like from one day to the next, and that's what you need to do. But I mean, you got guys like CJ Greaves, Adrian Cheney looking fast. I mean, and who are you going to pick? I mean, it's not even fair to us to be like, okay, who's dominating Pro 4 right now? It's like, hey, can the old man Johnny get it done? I mean, anyone can do it. It's just we're going to have to wait and see, and it's going to be fast.
Well, it seems like nobody's dominating Pro 4 right now, and that's kind of what makes it right. Fun. Coming into the year, obviously, CJ's the favorite because he always is in anything he drives. You know, that's just the way that it is right now in 2024 here in Champ Off-Road. Jimmy Henderson now has squeezed up into second in the points, 34 points down. You know, CJ didn't have the best weekend back at Dirt City, struggled a little bit. Henderson maybe with some momentum. By the way, CJ has 4 wins. The wild man, Adrian Cheney, has 3. How surprised are you by that?
I can't say I'm very surprised. I told you in the beginning parts of the year when I first seen Cheney with that new truck and talked to Case Gunderson, how he's like, oh, we're trying to give him the best equipment, Rena helping out as well. And there's guys that people don't know that are in the pits that have been around a long, long time. You and I know, but they're ready to swing away. They're ready to hit the ball out to the outfield. Like, they're ready to dominate. And I know he's got 3 wins, but I see him getting a couple more. I mean, Bark River, he could be dominant. Look at, I mean, how excited and ecstatic we were last year when he won. It's just a matter of who's going to be there in the end. Yeah, we can throw CJ out there and be like, yeah, the kid's going to dominate Bark River. But I think people are not afraid no more, and these drivers aren't afraid to drive these $500,000 trucks. If you want to say it, people probably give me a hard time, but say $300,000 trucks, and they drive them like they're $500 beaters. I mean, they got to try to keep them together, but that's whoever can file in and win the race is going to, whoever has anything left, because we've seen so many races this year, Shane, where there wasn't nothing left. We had 4 trucks.
And Pro 4 is all kind of always that way.
Right.
Look back at ERX. I mean, the craziest Pro 4 race still, I think, that I've ever seen. Lena had a race like that the opening weekend. Pro 4 especially seems like the class where anything can happen, and it usually does. Bark River seems to also make that happen more often for every class. That being said, is this the weekend that Kanen Baker wins in Pro 4? What do his chances look like? We saw him lead half a race in Lena back in round 9.
Well, I think his odds are looking pretty well. I mean, I'd probably throw a $20 bill at a casino on him because he's there, right? He's in a Douglas chassis. He looks comfy. Remember Douglas, how fast he was at Bark River? No matter when he showed up, he knew how to flow that track as well as possible. The truck, the equipment's there, and he's got the confidence. He comes out of that Pro Mod side-by-side, and he just rips in anything he gets into, and he's so confident, and I think there's a good chance we might see him. I think he'll be on the podium, but I'm not taking nothing away from him. If he's there, he's going to be there. He ain't afraid to throw his elbows up, if you know what I mean, Shane.
Well, let's talk about the other big truck class, too, a little bit. Pro 2. Stop me if you've heard this before, but we have a 1-point gap. Ryan Beat ahead of Mickey Thomas right now by 1 point. Kyle Greaves in third, only 21 points back of Beat, by the way, so he's still part of that conversation. But are we going to see another single-digit margin at the end of the year in Pro 2? That'd be 4 years in a row.
I don't know. We should probably ask Corey Winter that. Poor guy.
I was going to bring up Corey Winter because he's had his championship hopes dashed a couple times.
Right, right.
Just by, you know, 1 year, I think 2022, it was by 1 position. He had to make 1 more pass and just couldn't make the pass. That was the difference. A 4th place finish versus a 3rd. The 3rd would have won him the championship.
Yeah, that's crazy. In the final round. I feel bad, Corey, if you're listening to this someday down the road. I wasn't taking a stab at you. It's just the fact is it's got to be a bummer deal. I know you were up in the booth, Shane, rattling numbers off back and forth. And it's like, I can't imagine being underneath the helmet and trying to clear my mind of trying to win the race yet. Do I have enough points behind me? And like, oh man, that's how competitive and compacted this Pro 2 division is. And I think we might see, to go back to your question, I think we might see a single digit, but I mean, these trucks are so fast now in Pro 2. Got to remember, Johnny Holger, he got his first win at Bark River in Pro 2. and they got that thing dialed in. I mean, I was over there helping out earlier today, and I mean, you got to remember, there's a lot of trucks in this class. I mean, good to have Kyle Cooper back in the field.
Yeah, Keegan Kincaid as well.
Yep. Keegan, awesome to see him.
Well, the reason I brought up Corey Winter is because now he can maybe play the spoiler. I mean, there you can easily imagine a scenario where Corey Winter is mixing it up, trying to race for a win at Crandon in the final round, and he ends up ruining the championship for someone else. I say ruining, it makes it sound like I'm casting a negative shadow on it, but there is a real-world scenario where one of Ryan Beat or Mickey Thomas or Kyle Greaves has to pass Corey Winter, and if they can't do it, they don't win the championship. A lot to be excited for the end of the season. That's all I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, dude, my brain's just going nuts, dude. There's so much going on, and the Pro 2 division's so fun to see how it shakes out because we have a lot of trucks now, and I believe Bark River's going to bring in a few more, and this division's going to be one to watch. Cool to see Kyle Greaves in the mix with his first year in the Pro 2 division. And these big tracks create great racing. I mean, we got to go back to the Taco Bell Hill, dude. How far these guys will be flying, that's something to watch. Get by the fence like we were when we were kids, Shane, and we'll have to do that during practice. But it's a busy weekend. 3 days of racing, so you got to be prepped. These Pro 2s, I can't imagine the body bill, and I can't imagine the prep you have to do. I know these guys are going to be tired by Sunday.
Hey, just for the record, I'll handle all the math. You don't have to worry about that side of it.
Oh, that's fine. I hope you do.
You're off the hook. One more really great story coming into Bark River this weekend. Leland Tice, pro side-by-side, had a bad crash at Lena. He was fine, but broke the transmission in the car, broke the engine case, you know, twisted up the chassis a whole bunch. A few days ago, posted on social media that he wasn't going to make Bark River. You know, it was a done deal. They sized it up. They said they wouldn't be able to get the parts that they needed in time. And then, a couple hours later, he posted again that he came across all the parts he needed because Zach Schimmick loaned him a car and said, Leland, strip this down, take what you need, get out there. So Leland Tice, with the help of former ProLite world champion Zach Schimmick, back in the battle in pro side-by-side.
Dude, that's amazing, and Zach's out there to help people. He wants to get back into racing next year in 2025, and that's what our sport revolves around, is people that help other people, and it's selfishness. I mean, nobody is selfish in our pit, and Zach, he's helped out. He's offered us help. Me and my brother, in the days we couldn't afford to get things done, he would go out of his way to borrow us a trailer or something we needed from going from Green Bay to Bark River. It's just, that's what people do to help other people, and good for Leland, because he sounded pretty bummed, man. He wrecked a lot of stuff, and now this gets him back out there, and that confidence, keep it going, buddy.
Great people here in Champ Off Road around the pits. It's good people. Well, you know who else is good people, Brent? That is the fine people at AMSOIL, and this podcast, as always, is presented by AMSOIL. Champ Off Road fans, remember to visit AMSOIL.com to check out all the products that protect and maximize performance in all your vehicles and motorized toys. It doesn't matter if it's a motorcycle or your street car or an off-road truck. Whatever you have, they can supply you the lubricants that you need. Just use the convenient AMSOIL product guides. Type in what you need lubricants for. They will ship exactly what you need directly to your doorstep. AMSOIL, run with us. All right, if you're ready, I will hit record and you'll hear a dinging noise and then we will get started. All right, actually, give me about 10 seconds. All right, here we go. Well, our guest on this episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by AMSOIL, you know his name from Pro Buggy. He's currently third in points, Lorenzo Bonacci. Lorenzo, thank you so much for carving out a little time while you're actually riding in the shotgun seat on the way to Bark River.
Absolutely. I'm super glad to be here. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
So I want to take it back to the start of your racing career. At least here in the Midwest, you're relatively unknown, but you're an accomplished driver from your days racing in various series out west. But did you start somewhere else before short course?
Actually, no. I never even drove a race car, never drove a go-kart, never rode bikes or really any. I never did any sort of racing until I got into short course at all.
How were you introduced to short course racing that you decided it was something that you had to do?
It dates back to like 2008, 2009. My dad sells sunglasses to some dealers, And he had this one off-road shop that he would sell to. And I walked in with him one day, and they handed me this DVD. It was called Race Desert, Year in the Dirt, 2008. And I remember coming home and putting on my little DVD player and watching it and going through. I was like, oh, this is cool. It's all trophy trucks and buggies and Baja bugs and stuff. And just little like video clips of them like passing through some trails. And then like towards the end of the video, it showed it was like a trophy cart demo. I was like, this is super cool. There's like kids racing mini trophy trucks. And I got addicted. I had to do it almost. It was crazy. I was like so addicted. I'd watch that video hours all day long for days and weeks, just drooling over racing a short course kart.
It's kind of funny that that was your introduction to it. I was kind of born into short course off-road racing in a way, but as a kid, and I say kid, and I mean like age 5 through high school, at night I would throw in old VHS tapes of like Crandon races and watch them as I fell asleep. That's one way that we get hooked on this.
Oh, absolutely. It doesn't happen for everybody to be there in person. So it's like when you see it on the films, it's like, oh wow, I got to see this in real life. And you know, it's so much easier to see the videos, and you can watch it over and over and over again. Like, this is just amazing. I got to go see it.
So I know that your earlier days racing were actually in some of the mod kart classes, or at least one of the mod kart classes. Who were some of the other drivers that were racing mod kart at the time? Because I know we've got guys racing in Champ now, like Ricky Gutierrez and Cole Mamer was racing mod karts probably around the same time. Were you racing against any of those guys?
Before as we were getting into the trophy kart thing, we were looking for a kart to purchase. And, you know, it was, we were lucky to be able to find one. One of the guys that works at Trophy Kart helped us find one. And it was actually Cole Mamer's old trophy kart from when he raced, because I didn't get to race with him. He raced like about 5 or so years prior to me.
Okay.
And we found that cart, and it was kind of a box of bolts, pretty much the way we got it, and we put it back together. But that was Cole's. And then people that I raced with, Ricky Gutierrez, for sure. He was definitely the top dog of the class. I raced with Brody Eggleston, Trey Eggleston. They were both there. I missed racing with Trey Gibbs. He got out like a year or two before me. Let's see. Who else did I race with?
But definitely some guys that are still around.
Oh yeah, definitely. And they're all in Pro 2s, Pro Lights. They're in big trucks now. They're kicking it up a notch for sure. Well, I raced with Connor Berry too, and Mason Prater. They were both really, really, really good too.
Yeah, and Mason's still around tracks here in the Midwest too, helping out Johnny Holcher.
Yeah, it's really cool to see him out there. Whether he's racing a wrench, and it just goes to show that him being there, he really loves the sport.
At what point did you decide to make the jump into Pro Buggy then?
I did 2 years of trophy kart, and then after that, they pretty much kick you out when you're 16 years old. That was the first thing I started in, was the mod karts. And so I did 14 and then 15 years old, and I turned 16 like right before the season started. So they said that I couldn't race it. So I was like, you know what? I'm a buggy dork. And my dad had like a Myers Manx and a little dual sport buggy that I would go ride with him in. And I was like, you know what, Dad, let's do buggies. I think that this would actually be really fun. It's a total driver's class because it's open wheel, you can't touch, and it's really busy. And so I was like, you know what, this could really hone some driving skills right here if we could do something like this. And he was kind of hesitant at first about moving into a pro class, especially with money wise. But we got our car from a good friend, and they were like, you know, it's really not that bad as long as you just, their first year might be hard, but once you get it figured out, it's actually really easy. It's not so hard on the pocket.
And how fast did you pick it up? I mean, I know that you were competing for championships on the West Coast by the time that the racing scene sort of went away out there. Were you fast from day one?
Pretty. Kind of, yeah. I wasn't like the fastest guy out there, but definitely the mod carts taught me a lot of skill and a lot of driver development in that. So I was able to be competitive right off the bat. And I just ended up, like, as the races were going on, because we never had practice days. So really my only practice time was actually at the track or during race sessions. So it took me about my first year, but towards the end of it, it started really clicking. I was really starting to push the limits of the car. So it was really, really fast learning curve.
And then, so how many years did you race West? I know you were at Crandon. Was that for the 50th that you were at Crandon? So 2019?
Yeah, that was my last year in mod karts. We did 2018, but we didn't hit any Midwest states. for racing. So we did 2019 Crandon at the end of the year. Yep, in the mod cart.
At what point did you, you know, was it just like the instability in racing out west that coming into this year, you're like, all right, I have to go race somewhere. And that's what drove you to jump back and forth across country racing champ?
Yeah, you know, there definitely wasn't really much in the way of promotion wise for our series out on the west, and not a lot of drivers really started coming to it. And I was kind of bummed because all the racers that are around there are all West Coast based drivers. I asked them, well, hey, why aren't you guys showing up to these races? We need to build the car count so the series can grow. And they're just like, I don't want to do it or whatever. There's other series. Cause they started opening up side by side series, and that was kind of taking away our car count and some of the fans, which was kind of a bummer. But when it closed down, you know, I was already planning to come out here this year anyways, because this is where like the official national series is. And I was like, you know what? I want to race against the best of the best. And that is going to mean that I'm going to have to drive cross country to go out and race with these guys.
And I remember talking to you and your dad a little bit at Antigo, which was, you know, the second weekend of the season. And you were saying like the atmosphere here in the Midwest is like night and day different from out there. And like, just the vibes at the racetrack. Do you still feel that way now that you're 2/3 of the way through the season?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's cool, especially like the racers. Like, I mean, out west is typical Californians, you know, not a lot of people were welcoming until you really got to know them. It's kind of hard to break the ice for some people. But I mean, a lot of people were cool, but they're super cool out here. Like just right off the bat, I don't even know anybody. And I just go up and walk up to somebody and say, hey, I'm Lorenzo or this and that. And like, oh, you want to come over for dinner? Pretty practically, you know, it's a super, super welcoming environment, and it makes it so much fun to race out here. And it's hard to not like anybody, like whether they did something wrong to you or you did something wrong to them. It's just, it's all in the sport and all in the mind of the competition and the game. So it's like you keep your stuff on the track and you have your friend and your friendship life off of the track. And so everybody's, I think, really, really cool, no matter what way, who's in what position for points or anything. It's a total family environment.
Not only that, but you know, you brought up, you even used the words buggy dork. You're a buggy dork and your dad's a buggy dork. I'm a buggy dork. I think the like buggy racing community here in the Midwest, I like it's so baked into people. The buggy scene here is 50 plus years old. Do you feel like you found your people, I guess, is the question that I've been trying to ask here.
Yeah. It's definitely cool to see that people actually take an interest in buggies out here. Cause I know it was really strongly, it was almost like everybody wanted you to race trucks out on the West Coast. It was more of a truck market, but out here it's super cool to see so many buggies. It's like, I've never seen this many buggies ever in my life at one spot. And so I'm just like, oh, this is definitely where I belong.
Did you expect that you would gain the fan following that you have here in the Midwest? Because like, I feel like you've been embraced. Like the meme off-road meme pages are like constantly posting about you, and you know, you've been interviewed by Joey Moss. People here seem to really like you. Did you expect that you would just come in first year racing here full time, and that's how it would go for you?
No, I honestly expected, you know, like the exact opposite. I figured, of course, kill them with kindness, and you can't hate somebody that's not kind to you or that's not a nice person. And having a fresh start with new fans and new people, I want to be the good guy. But I thought that honestly, like, you know, being a Californian or from the other side of the coast, like I might have a couple people that didn't like me, but you know, it's super cool to have fans. And especially, as you said, the traction that I'm gaining with it and how many fans are actually like paying attention with the racing and are like liking me as a person. It's actually super cool for sure.
And you mentioned this a little while ago too, that part of what drew you to racing in Champ Off Road is that the level of competition, and especially Pro Buggy this year, is, you know, maybe the best I've seen it in 20 years. And like I said, I've been around this my whole life. That's got to invigorate you even more. You're racing against like Mark Steinhardt is an absolute Midwest legend of buggy racing. He's been winning championships since before you were born. And you're racing against Dave Mason Jr. And all of a sudden, both Bernlohr brothers are fast. And you've got Billy Booth, who's been winning championships in the Midwest. Was that intimidating coming into race against those guys? And how has it been so far?
It's been really good. I wasn't intimidated per se. I was more like, I haven't driven with them. So I didn't know what to expect. But, you know, I figured these guys race super clean out here. And I've watched some videos from last year's racing. I was like, you know what? I think I can trust these guys. I'm just going to do what I do and race how I want to be raced, and we'll see how it goes. And, you know, it's been super great so far, especially racing with pretty much my heroes of Pro Buggy. And to be able to compete with them is just a feeling off the charts. It's hard to explain, but it's like, it's amazing, I guess you could say it. But, and absolutely the whole field's gotten super fast. I know kind of towards the beginning of the season, I feel like I took people by surprise, and I kind of surprised myself too with how good I would do. You know, the way that I've been telling my dad and stuff, it's like iron sharpens iron. I come out and I have new things that I've learned from my West Coast racing, and I show it to these guys, and they kind of absorb and learn from it. And they're teaching me things too at the same time. And so it's like, we're bettering the classes together. Everybody's not like competing against each other. We're just working to make the class faster. And it's become insanely incredible, close, fast, professional racing.
You bring up a good point that, you know, it's learning to race in a new group of people is a learning experience, but you're also racing on tracks that you've never raced on before. So Antigo, for example, you went out and swept Antigo, your first time ever racing there. How are you preparing to race on these tracks that you've maybe only seen on video?
There's not really too much to do to prepare, really, because it's not like I can go out and walk the track on any given day. Whether you walk the track, you have to drive it to really know. When I was on the West Coast, I had a sponsor, a Pole Position Karting, and it was like a public go-kart track. And he would help me. He'd give me good discounts on races. I would just go and race like 4 or 5 races a week almost. And going to the public tracks, every kart is different. Because you have the general public that comes in, and sometimes people break karts. And so when they go to fix them, there's still stuff slightly bent.
Hey, my friends and I would never do that. I don't know what you're talking about.
Trust me, everybody says it, but it's all, you know, everybody gets adrenaline and they... You want to be the best of your buddies. I know the feeling.
The roughest go-kart race I've ever been in was against a former Pro 2 champion, a former Pro Light, and 2 former Pro Light racers. Yeah, so I know how it gets.
It can get hairy sometimes. Sometimes karts even go flying. We'll slide them into some guys, and they'll be 2 wheels in the air. They'll go under the barriers. It gets wild, for sure. Everybody thinks because you got a bumper around the wheels, it's practically bumper cars, but with race cars, almost. But every kart is super different. And so, like, I would go in and one car might steer better to the right, one might steer better to the left, or this one has a hopping wheel. And I had to learn to adapt to the car. And so even though the track stayed the same, still you're learning how to adapt fast. And I've been doing that a lot. And so coming out to these races that I don't know what the track's like, or, you know, what the track layout is or what the lines are, just based off of learning those things and learning how to adapt fast to it. I mean, I almost don't even need to see the track. I could go sight unseen and just go and do like one lap, just a cruise lap. And then right after that, almost everything just clicks. And especially that only comes with knowing your car, because when you know the limits of your car, then you know where you can be fast on the track and where you can't be and stuff. It all just meshes together perfectly.
Yeah, I think it's a good point that you made about the point I think you're kind of getting at is any seat time can also sharpen you too. I mean, you look at the mix of drivers who are doing well in Champ Off Road. You got guys like Ryan Beat, you know, motocross, supercross guy, the points leader in mod kart right now, Avery Hemmer. She races snowcross. That's where she got her start. So I think that's a great point.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything you can do to get the seat time and to get your mind racing. I mean, of course, while you're racing, to just get your mind running and you're thinking, and you get to learn the reaction and what the car is doing, or what your riding is doing. And it definitely sharpens your skills of how to adapt with whatever you're in and wherever you're at. Like if you look at supercross riders or motocross riders, every track they go to, most of the time is different, especially supercross. They don't have the same track twice, even in the same state. Like every time they go to that same racetrack, it's a different layout every single year. So you have to learn how to adapt and where the right throttle points, and that's where your mind and car connection, you know, helps, because you know exactly what you're doing with your car on that track.
So I want to talk a little bit about your team operation. Am I correct that your team is just you and your dad?
Physically, it is. It's just me and my dad that are like working on the car, wrenching on the car. But I do have another guy that actually works at CarTech over in SoCal by our house, and he's been helping me a lot with like any questions that I have, tire cuts, you know, shock setup, you know, because I don't have anybody at the track that I can tell, like, hey, I need to feel like it's pushing here, or it's too soft here and whatnot that could help me do the setup. So I just go and text him, and he's like, yeah, you know what? Try this little change. Try that little change. And it ends up working. It's really awesome. But otherwise, physically working on the car, it's just me and my dad.
You might be the only racer I've ever heard of that has remote support, like a remote crew guy.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, if I could afford to, I'd bring him to the track, but it's kind of difficult. We need every dollar we can get towards the race car in sure. itself, especially being long distance. So, you know, he was totally up to the challenge, you know, of being the remote behind the scenes crew chief. And it definitely helps a lot. Because he used to groove tires for a lot of sprint cars out here. And so he kind of knows some of the dirt and whatnot. So he really helps me out with anything I need tire-wise or setup-wise. And it works out usually pretty good, more than not.
You mentioned traveling, you know, the burden of traveling back and forth. How often this summer have you been home? Like, what has your travel schedule looked like since the middle of May?
Well, we went back after Lena, the very first race, because my dad's younger brother, my uncle, unfortunately passed. So we had to go to do the celebration of life. And I also ended up getting some parts service while we were down there. But we stayed up here in Wisconsin from Antigo to Crandon. And then we went after Crandon back with some transmission related issues. And then we did ERX, and then we went to Dirt City, and you know, it was what it was. And then we just went back again after Lena because of the crash to get the car fixed. Fortunately, we were able to get it done in time to come back out here. We're going to try and do our best at Bark River.
What does your last week and a half look like? Because you know, you mentioned, you know, having the run-in with the wall at Dirt City, and that was what, 10 days ago. And now you're almost back to Bark River as we're recording on Wednesday night. So what has the last 10 days looked like for you?
Pretty much the day after the race, I went and called the guy that built my car at Racer Engineering. And he said, I'll do what I can. I'm not going to make you any promises, but the sooner you get here, the sooner I can help you get on the track. If you want to race, I'll make sure I'll do my best to make that happen. And we were like, all right, say less. We didn't even get to wash the car. The car still got dirt from Lena on it. And we drove straight down nonstop. You know, the van never shut off. Unless you're at the gas station filling up for gas, but it never shut off. We drove down there, got him the car. And that same day we were cutting tubes off, cutting the bottom front end of the car off, you know, and we got another one of those guys that does the computer design. He computer designed a lower suspension mounting bracket for us. And we were just welding stuff. They were welding stuff in all weekend. All his guys were working all weekend long. And I can't thank them enough for doing that for me, pumping the car out. And then while they were doing that, I was doing parts runs, like with my King Shocks. I had amazing support from them, like amazing, amazing. I called it in before we left. I told them what I needed with the valving and what type of shock. SM, they're like, we'll get it done for you right now. And they ended up just building me brand new shocks because it was easier to do that. So I got new shocks, new front end on this car. it's going to be exciting. I don't even know how the front end is going to work, you know, how the front suspension is going to work. Now it might be different, but the car rolled, and that's all that I care about. I can adapt to it fast enough, I think. But it's just been nonstop, 100%. All day long, every day.
If you had to estimate, how many good nights of sleep have you had out of the last 10?
Let's just say two. I think Friday night I got a decent amount of sleep because the guys at the shop didn't need me very early. And then Saturday night, I maybe got like 7-8 hours in. That was pretty good. But other than that, it's been like, for me and my dad, like four hours. At the least, between 4 and 6 hours every day, you know, and we're busting butt all day long. So it seems like, oh yeah, that might not be that much, but it's not like we're doing just 12-hour days. It's a way longer than that.
Right.
Just that much sleep.
I've like flat out told people before, I don't know how off-road racers do it, especially like right now in the dog days of the summer when it's, you know, one weekend off after ERX and then one weekend off after Dirt City before Bark River. This part of the season, like, wears me out, and I'm not working on a race car. I'm just preparing to talk about them. So I get it. You guys are built different. I've said that before.
It's just a passion for the racing. If you love the sport enough, you'll do whatever it takes to get there and participate. And we have a lot of passion, a lot of determination here. You know, everything that happens, whether it's good or bad, you just, instead of looking at it as a bad thing, use it as motivation to get out there and do better for the next one and show everybody that, yeah, I could have been this is what could have been. You know, you go out and you have a break or whatever, and you go and do really good the next week. You're like, yeah, that could have been what happened when I broke. So as long as you just come back better, everything's usually good.
So you'll get your chance to come back better this weekend. You get three rounds. Run into some bad luck. You had, I think, some electrical problems out in Minnesota. Entanglement with the concrete wall and Lena. What is your approach coming into this weekend? You've got a little bit of points to make up in the championship hunt. What's the approach?
The approach is just for like our first session. I know we get a practice / qualifier, and that's just going to be to get a feel with the car and how to get comfortable with the track. And then after that, you know, depending if the car works really good, then, you know, it's just going to be maintain a good pace, pass if you can, but just stay clean. Don't make any stupid moves. Don't make any dumb moves. You're here to check the checkered, not to wreck. And so as long as you can do that, you know, you got something on a lot of other people that could possibly break or overdrive their cars and whatnot.
Do you still feel like you have a good chance at a championship? I mean, do you still feel in the fight? Think you're 36 down to first?
Well, 36 down to first, but only like 6 or 8 out of second. You know, I want to try and charge and see what I can do to get myself back into second place. You know, if we have a good weekend here at Bark River, then that could be a possibility. But anything can happen to anyone, you know, just like how I had that unfortunate wreck at Lena. I'm not saying somebody's going to wreck, but, you know, there's things. You could have a flat tire, you could have a broken shift linkage, or, you know, you could lose brakes, and you just got to do what you can to try and make points. But if that can't happen, you know, then it's kind of tough luck. But, yeah, no, anything can happen, and we still have almost feels like half a season to go with how many more races we have left.
Now, I'm gonna preface this by saying I am going out of my way not to announcers curse you. If you can come back and win the championship, how much would that mean to you to be a rookie in the Midwest? You're not a rookie, but a rookie in Champ Off Road and win in such a competitive class. How huge would that be for you? How would that feel?
It would mean everything. It'd mean the world to me. We've done enough racing to where we just race for wins or race, and we've tried getting at championships. We haven't got it, but right now is like my own shot. It's almost like a make it or break it year for me. In a way, like if I get this championship, I think it could open a lot more doors to keep me on the track. But if I don't, some of those doors might close, and I don't know what's gonna happen. But this is all I have my eyes set on. I'm almost obsessed over it, trying to get this championship. Yeah, no, it means everything. So everything for me to get this, to get that lay rose put around in my neck and pop that champagne bottle.
I know that a lot of your fans here in the Midwest want nothing more than that, for that to happen to you. Hopefully you can get a good start on it this weekend.
I hope so too. You know, we've put in so much work to get it. You know, it would really hurt to miss out or come short. But you know what? All I can say is that we put a good effort in. We gave it our all. We gave it 110%. And, you know, it really all falls into the hands of God. Whatever God wants me to have is what I'm going to get, whether it's second or it's first or it's nothing, you know, that he kind of determines all of that. You know, if I end up doing it, all glory to him. It really has all been miracles all throughout this season. With all our bad luck, there's always been good luck. It all comes from him, for sure.
Amen. Well, hey, Lorenzo, we really appreciate you taking some time. We'll look forward to seeing you on the track 3 times this weekend, and we wish you the best of luck in Bark River.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Shane. I really appreciate it.
Well, a couple more big stories, Brent, coming into Bark River. ProLite, I would not have predicted this, but we may be on early clinch alert for that championship. Trey Gibbs, an 85-point lead over the rest of the ProLite field. Again, pros have 3 races at Bark River and then only 1 points race at Crandon. So 4 rounds remaining. If he leaves Bark River with a 58-point lead, he will be the champion 1 weekend early in ProLite. Even a strong weekend, a strong first couple races could clinch it after round 11 on Saturday night.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be fast. I know he's going to be fast at Bark River. And for him, I mean, he'd have to lose almost, what, 30 points, 20-some points, like to even think about it. So I don't know. He just got to keep doing what he's doing. It's going to be hard to stop Trey Gibbs. I mean, Gibbs has been just a rocket.
Carson Parrish also seems to do really well at the elevation tracks. He does extremely well at ERX Motor Park, has a couple of wins there in his career. I think he'll be a threat at Bark River. But yeah, how dominant has Trey Gibbs been, man? It's been really unbelievable. For me, the scariest thing about the season he's having I don't remember if it was after Saturday at Dirt City or after Sunday, but he was on the podium after winning again, and he won by like 10 seconds. And then he said, yeah, we didn't have our best run out there today. I'm like, my goodness. What does his best run look like right now?
I don't know. I think we've seen it a couple different times, and he's just hard on himself because he wants to be the best, right? And that's why you're out there, and you see all different drivers in that class of the Pro Light going, hey, you know, you drive them on the edge, but yet you go over the edge, you go over the edge really hard and you break the trucks. So it's a fine line, and we don't have many trucks in Pro Light, but the drivers we do have in the class, I think we're going to see some maybe different winners even to help out the other guys. I mean, Matt Wood, he's there. Parrish, he's there. Yeah, I mean, yeah, and I look for guys like that that love these fast straightaway tracks. I mean, it reminds me of Kyle Kleiman, right? We miss that kid. Haven't seen him around in a while, but he used to be so quick at his hometown track because he just knew it. He felt the dirt. He knew what he needed to do to run that fast line. And I think Pro Light's going to be amazing to watch.
Well, another class that might be on maybe yellow alert, Pro Light level red alert, I think, for an early clinch. But Pro-Am side-by-side, David Gay. First of all, I've never seen someone roll, hit their roof into a solid wood post that's off the racetrack and then come back, battle through traffic, and finish fourth like he did at Lena. That aside, which was incredible. 70-point lead in Pro-Am side-by-side. Again, sportsmen have two rounds at Crandon, so David would need a 105-point lead leaving Bark River. He's got to find another 35 points. That's a taller order, but the way he's run this year, I think it's possible.
Yeah, I mean, anything's possible, right? You could have two bad days, three different rounds, but you could have two bad days and one decent day. It could shake anything up, but I think David Gay is going to keep doing what he's doing to maintain that points lead. He's so fast, and it seems like I don't care where he starts, 14th, 15th, right? He's usually one of our biggest movers if he starts that deep. But if he starts in the top five, he's going to be on the podium each and every time, and that's going to create him enough points to clinch everything.
I'm not trying to tell Mr. Gay what to do, but I would love to see what he could do next year, maybe in like a pro stock side by side.
Yeah, you can recognize talent when you see it, Shane. We've been around long enough, and you just hope these guys and gals can find that money and that program to move up. And I think he's one to watch. He's not afraid to rip around these tracks.
Well, one more super fun class. You already mentioned it, stock truck. I think at this point here for the 2024 season, every podcast is going to include a stock truck update. We're having so much fun with it. You know, we talked about all the different winners that we've had so far. I think we got up to 8 winners through 9 rounds. The class is super competitive. Top 7 still within 42 points. Again, 5 rounds of points racing left for stock truck. Don't miss it. I know I've said that before a couple different times. You got to see it. Get there early enough in the day. Check out stock truck. It's been so much fun all year. Ask us to predict who's going to win the 2 race or 3 races in Bark River. Could not tell you. Throw a dart at the lineup sheet.
Yeah, you talk about 42 points that separate all the top 7. And look at that number 42. Maybe the 542, the hometown boy of Jinchak, he can nail another win down. I mean, I was talking to him the other day on the phone back and forth. We were snapping, and he put a brand new body for the hometown track race on, so it can look a little bit more spiffier. And we were talking about the upper ball joints. And here, you know, I look at a picture and I try to help a kid. Me and Brock went through that when we were racing. You know, how to re-strengthen your upper A-arms and lower control arms. And he's like, yeah, man, I'll go look at that because, you know, you'd hate to see something bend some more and hurt the truck or hurt the driver. But you always try to help out the person, you know, no matter what. I think he's going to have a good shot, but Rogacheski, I can't wait to see how fast he can be at Bark River.
Everybody, I mean.
Right. Top 7. Top 7.
Yeah, there was a time in the race, which would have been round 9 at Lena Sunday. By the way, having that rain delay earlier in the season, and now we're doing even rounds on Saturday, I'm still wrapping my head around that. That's why I've stuttered.
Yeah, you're doing numbers, times. You told me, right? You're doing numbers still?
I'm doing my best. That's all I can do. Anyways, there was a race that I think every truck on the track spun out or got tangled up with someone else at one point, and there was a real moment where I thought Hope Conrad was going to get her first win. And then she was also battling for the lead with Randy Ewart, who had never driven a stock truck before that day. So, again, stock truck, take everything you love about Pro 4 and how wild it is, put it in a almost completely stock, older Chevy or Ford truck. That stock truck, I cannot reiterate that enough. It's been so fun to watch this year.
Yeah, it has been. And we get so excited because it's our second race of the day each and every weekend, and it gets the blood flowing, right? I mean, I don't care who you are. You can go to bed whenever you want, but the mornings are a little tough to get going. It's 18 races a day for Shane and I, so it's ridiculous some days how much we have to call that stock truck gets us going and gets us through the mornings, and I cannot wait to see who shakes out. We are going to have probably another good shot at another new time winner. Who knows? Maybe somebody could show up out of the woodwork.
Well, I mentioned earlier in the show, Brent, that Bark River last year was just a completely wild time. I remember Saturday, which would have been round 9 last year, a bunch of like door-to-door, fender-to-fender finishes for wins. I think the count was like 7 or 8 races that were less than a second at the line. You had the Pro 4 Mayhem in round 10 on Sunday. The return of the Wild Man to the winner's circle. I remember that. I'll never forget the super stock truck finish between Braden Beauchamp and Scott Belanger, where Braden ran Scott out into the wall and he tore down the fence. And then they shook hands about it because they were both just excited for how awesome it was. The water truck tipped over. That everything happened at Bark River last year. I just can't wait to get back there.
Yeah, dude, the drama's going to be over the top. I mean, it's going to be a good weekend for the kids and the fans. And kids, when we were that age, are going to just have fun at, 7, 8 years old bringing home body panels, because it's Bark River. It's going to get torn up. Bodies are going to get torn up. But you're going to see these trucks really stretch out and get these speeds and show you in person how fast these trucks can really go. And it's going to be amazing. It's my hometown track, I keep saying. A lot of help from the volunteers and the Lions Club that made it all work. Once again, it's crazy to think that it's August, Shane, already. Like, what the heck?
Well, the year is absolutely flying by, and I'm sad that you reminded me of that fact. But more, like you said, more memories to be made at Bark River. We will be live on Flow Racing for Pro Round 10, 4:15 p.m. That's Eastern Time on Friday. And that is the Forest County Potawatomi Brush Run makeup round. So we'll be racing the Forest County Potawatomi Brush Run at Bark River International Raceway, as if they needed to throw one more curveball at us. Then Saturday, 9:45 a.m. again, Eastern Time, that is the beginning of the Island Resort and Casino Off-Road Rumble in the UP. 3 days of racing. I cannot wait to get there. I know you can't wait to get there, even though you're kind of already there. We hope that you join us again. 4:15 Eastern, Friday, Pro Round 10 from Bark River. We hope to see you there. And thanks for listening to this episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by AMSOIL.
Thanks for listening to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by AMSOIL.
Hey, Brent, I've been talking to some of my friends up there in the Upper Peninsula. They said that the off-roads are in town. Is that true?
I don't know, man. There's been a lot of different talk of maybe some mud drags. I had to do that for Chris. We can't use it, though.